Welcome to the Real Python Podcast. This is episode 279. Are you looking for that solid foundation to begin your Python journey? Would the accountability of scheduled group classes help you get through the basics to start building something? This week, two members from the Python for Beginners Live course discuss their experiences. We speak with course instructor Stephen Grappetta about building a course where the participants start using their knowledge as soon as possible. He describes how he's evolved his techniques over the years of teaching beginners. We explore the advantages of having a curated collection of written tutorials, video courses, and a forum to ask nagging questions. Then we speak with students Lewis and Andrew about their experiences learning Python through the course. They also discuss learning how to apply their new skills, employing them in their careers, and building confidence to continue their Python learning journey. All right, let's get started. The Real Python Podcast is a weekly conversation about using Python in the real world. My name is Christopher Bailey, your host. Each week, we feature interviews with experts in the community and discussions about the topics, articles, and courses found at realpython.com. After the podcast, join us and learn real-world Python skills with a community of experts at realpython.com. Hey, Stephen, welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. Nice to be back.
I was just thinking about that. You've been on the show 3 1/4 times.
So I'm adding to my tally today.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, we'll be at 4 1/4. Yeah. You were most recently on with Martin. We talked about advice for beginning to learn Python in episode 268. And then 266 was my quarter time where you were announcing the Python for Beginners live course that you just completed, actually. And we wanted to talk a little bit about it. And we're going to have a conversation with a couple people that were in the course, which I'm excited to get into. But congratulations on completing another live course here.
Thank you. Yes, we carry on our theme with beginners, which I think it's important to discuss because there's differences between beginners learning Python and more intermediate programmers. So I'm looking forward to having a chat.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by that too. That's partly why I wanted to ask you how it went and kind of things that you found that were unique about it.
Let's actually take a step back in designing the course because I'm lucky enough to have designed the course and delivered it.
Yeah.
And I think the code of confidence in some ways with these courses, when you have a live course, you're meeting students face-to-face, well, I mean, via Zoom, but in a live format. I think you want to see, well, what value added is there that you can only get from this live interaction?
Sure.
And I think the code with confidence part, that's where it comes in, because what you can do in a live session is make sure you sort of weave a thread between all the topics. And you need the feedback from the students for that.
Yeah.
It's where, oh, I actually didn't quite get how these two things are linked. And then you can have a bit of a discussion with the group and dive a bit further into it. So I think that constant feedback between me teaching something, but the participants being there, commenting back, you can see from their faces, they're not getting this, so let me try something else. Or from their questions. And often the questions they ask, we can then sort of meander down the path and then loop back in. And that discussion, that sort of stroll around the Python back alleys, as it were,
yeah,
they're often more important and more useful than the main topic itself, because it's how you glue things together. So I think that's where the code with confidence comes in. This format where you can actually chat to people live allows you to do that. And I need that a lot. I need to have things bounce back from the students, and I take on their cues, on their questions,
yeah,
and that helps me know sort of whether to go faster, whether to slow down, whether to spend a bit more on a certain topic and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I miss that as far as teaching in the classroom. Number one, the light bulbs, like we all kind of talk about that as teachers. I don't know what the opposite of that is. the frown face or something. But yeah, something about them asking a question leads you as a teacher to say, oh, I guess I could explain it in a new way, and you end up learning new things, new techniques for teaching these concepts. And it also kind of emboldens this group of people to say, oh, I can ask questions and I can get clarity on something, or it can lead their brain to think about other stuff. Was that some of the experiences you were having?
Absolutely. And I think this is especially true. It's true for all instruction, I think, but it's especially true for a beginner's course, because in some ways, teaching absolute beginners, you know, Python 101, starting from the basics, in many ways, it's harder than teaching intermediate, because for us instructors, the material is not difficult, but the gap between where you as an instructor are comfortable at and where your students are is so big that we forget what it's like not to know how to write a for loop or not to know how to define a function. So in some ways, that's a big challenge with teaching beginners. You need to always see things from the perspective of someone who's absolutely new. But then the discussions you have with them, that's where you realize that you are getting at the right level. Because if you have lots of blank faces and lots of, I had no idea what you're talking about, clearly there's still a gap. But if you can see that the students are engaging and they're sort of getting back to you, it's like, oh, so let me see whether I've understood this correctly. And you think, yeah, that's
perfect. Yeah.
So it helps you auto-adjust the level and the tone and how you discuss. And as you said, sort of finding new ways of explaining the same thing.
Yeah.
It's an iterative process. There you go. Speaking of teaching Python, you're constantly fine tuning things. And I mean, I love analogies. I know we've talked about this in previous times I've been on the show.
We both love them. Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, with analogies, you have a student ask a question and you think, oh, I've never taken the analogy down this path. Let's give it a go. And then sort of with time, you sort of refine how you explain things, the terms you use. I'm a big believer in the words you use when you're teaching. Even the order of the words sometimes matters, because you're taking your learners on a sort of on a cognitive journey.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot in terms of, what do I do first? Do I do A or B? And there's a lot of thought into, I'd rather do this first. And then it, sort of the order and how you introduce things, and importantly, the stuff you leave out. It's so tempting to talk about everything.
Yeah.
But when you're teaching anything, but especially beginners, you really need to rein in and say, no, I'm not going to go down all of these paths. I'm going to stop here, even though there's lots more I'd like to say. And then maybe in 2, 3, 4 weeks' time, or maybe in a future course, they'll get to this. But that is hard. But I think it's...
I feel that that's one of the biggest anti-patterns of teachers wanting to show they're smart.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's not the goal here. It is not to prove your incredible like knowledge of a thing or overwhelm someone with it. It's the exact opposite of that, is to say, hey,
exactly.
Yeah. And that's hard for a lot of teachers, I think. Yeah.
The life form, it then also means that if there's a student who, however, asks a question that opens the door to something that maybe I wouldn't have discussed, then you have an opportunity to sort of just briefly mention it. Say, oh, since you ask, here's something that will come in the future. Here's a taster of it, but let's not spend too much time on it. So then you can still introduce some of those ideas if someone has already sort of read ahead or knows a bit more. So I think the live interaction allows you to be flexible with this stuff as well.
Yeah, we would joke as a teacher, often the meter is reading full, you know, as far as their brain for the day kind of thing. And it's like, you can definitely overwhelm someone and then they just sort of turn off. They're like, I can't absorb anymore at the moment, and I need to start using this stuff. And I think that's something that you focus on a lot too, is I was surprised, and I think we discussed this in the previous conversations, that you were starting right away with like, hey, we're going to get in and start using this stuff right away. Like, how are you implementing projects and how did that go through this process?
Yeah. So the idea was that there are mini projects throughout the whole course. So the way the course was set up, it was an 8-week course. The final 2 weeks, and we may talk about this in a bit, was a lengthier project.
Yeah.
But throughout the first 6 weeks where we're introducing the concepts, we had mini projects going throughout. And the idea is that rather than spending too long talking about the theory, the abstract theory, it's sort of flipping it the other way around and saying, yeah, let's briefly introduce these topics, but let's actually start working on this mini project. And as we go through it, we realize we need to do this now. here's the Python tool to do it. Let's introduce it. And then that fits into the project.
Yeah.
And as you move through the project, you're sort of, now, of course, these projects were designed to make sure that we tick all the important topics. And that's an important, that's something that you don't always get from self-learning, I guess. If you pick a project, you may end up with gaps, whereas I made it my job to make sure that throughout these 6 weeks, there are no gaps. So I've chosen these mini projects to make sure that we do pass through all of these important topics, but we're still finding out we need to do something as part of a project. And I think that makes it more engaging, more real. And it showcases these tools better because you're seeing them almost straight away used in a real project rather than in a toy example as part of an abstract discussion.
Yeah, why I'm smiling is that I thought of a interesting analogy of, I don't know if you, in your schooling, had wood chop.
No.
And you walk into a huge place of with all of the machinery and so forth, and imagine being a new person and saying, oh, I have no idea how to properly use a drill press or a table saw or any of these kinds of things. And to be introduced to them like one by one, hey, you're going to build something with this thing, as opposed to like, again, somebody who all the knowledge is there, like all the machinery of Python is there and you can start using it all and like make all these kind of mistakes. Of course, it's a little less prone to losing a digit or something, but it's kind of the same kind of thing that could be nervous. Somebody kind of looking at all of it and having somebody to kind of guide you into, hey, let's do some small projects here. I know other people are like chomping at the bit to go play with the bigger stuff sometimes.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's the case too in teaching beginners sometimes. They really want to learn something very specific.
Absolutely. Silly joke warning. But yeah, I think in programming, it's other digits we lose, right? So, so there we go.
Exactly.
I've warned you. You were warned. Yeah. So yes, I think that's the purpose of these projects. I think it's a way of introducing the topics, but within something.
Yeah.
These were small projects. But then what we wanted to do is to have a longer project at the end. So we finished, the final 2 weeks were just the project. And that's where we could start from an idea, a blank page.
Yeah.
And in fact, many of the students found that process really useful because one of the challenges with programming is you've learned quite a few of the tools you need.
Yeah.
And maybe you've been able to put them together in small mini projects, you know, the 50-line type of script. But when it comes to a larger project, there's a bit more of the thinking and the planning and choosing what data types to use, choosing what tools to use. And that is not easy. It's not easy for anyone, but it's not easy for beginners.
Yeah.
So I think by having a final 2 week project where we could go through that process, decide bit by bit, here's what we're trying to do. Here are all the tools we've learned about in the last 6 weeks. Which ones could we use? So maybe this, maybe this, maybe that. Let's consider the pros and cons of all of them. And that sort of process. And I think that was an important way of ending the course because you're seeing the process of developing software rather than just learning the Python tools that you need.
Yeah, awesome. You've been teaching beginners for a while in other formats on your own and your own kind of courses. And now that you're teaching for Real Python, you did the intermediate course earlier this year. But I was wondering, as you go back to teaching beginners again, how have the questions they have changed for those who are learning Python now at this point in time, which is different?
Yeah. So as you say, 10 years ago, there was no AI.
Yeah.
Certainly not in the form we have now. Well, programming is obviously changing, but learning is changing as well. They're two separate things. In fact, during the course, we actually talked a lot about AI because, well, it's 2025, right?
Right.
We have to talk about AI. So I think what's interesting is that many people still feel the need that they need a human being to talk to and to discuss and to understand. So you might think that in this age of AI, AI can do all the teaching. And I'm sure that some people can just go and have a chat with ChatGPT or Claude or whatever and learn whatever they need through those parts. But I think many learners realize that you need that human interaction, that ability to not just ask questions, because you can ask questions to Claude or whatever, but I think that connection with someone who can really understand you. So that's what a good educator does, right? They understand the student, and in some ways they can predict the questions that they will have, because the student might not be in a position to ask the right question.
Right.
But an instructor will know what question the student would like to ask and therefore answer it. Whereas maybe in the future, but at the moment, I think AI can't quite do that. You know, it doesn't have the perhaps that human intuition of knowing. Sometimes, you know, you see a beginner saying, look, I'm trying to ask a question. You're like, look, I think this is what you're trying to ask me.
Yes.
And then they're like, yes, that's exactly it. So I think that's where the human interaction comes in, which is useful. So yeah, I think teaching has changed. And of course, we want to now learn how to use AI to help us learn.
Right.
But those chats, my teaching has always been very informal, very much a conversation, me with the students, whether it was 8-9-year-olds I used to teach Python to, or adults, like in this case, I think that conversation is really important. And somehow that is still a human-to-human conversation. So AI comes in and we can use these tools. I think what it does is it helps you perhaps get from A to Z or A to Z faster.
Yeah.
And that's what AI is doing, I think. Before, perhaps the journey was longer, whereas now you can not shorten it too much, but you can start shortening it a bit because the AI tools are bridging some of the gaps that previously would have taken a bit more time. So I think that's what's changing. I think it's quicker to move ahead in your learning journey.
Right. Well, that's the problem then, is that you can move ahead so fast, but then not have the understanding, and you kind of gloss over like,
absolutely,
oh, maybe that wasn't important or whatever. And then they realize like, okay, wait, there's a gap in my learning, and finding these sort of pitfalls that they can kind of fall into, which makes me think about like, well, how were questions the same? What were some of the same things that came up that maybe that surprised you, or like, okay, that's good, we're reinforcing these concepts?
Yeah, I think as we were mentioning before, what's nice about having discussions and having questions is that the questions that participants ask serve two purposes. They serve the obvious purpose. They are asking a question, they want an answer to it. They've got a gap in their knowledge they've identified. But it helps the instructor figure out at what level they understood.
Yeah.
Because depending on the question you ask, I know how much you've understood. So I think those questions are really important for both sides of the learning process, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. As you went through the process, what did you see the students excited about learning? What was it that seemed to get them going as they were learning Python?
Well, I think it's always, you mentioned it before, those aha moments. And
yeah.
And I think it's when they see different bits of the puzzle and they see how they come together nicely in Python. So we had a lot of these discussions where we would cover a number of topics. And then you realize that they're somehow all interconnected. Things like, for example, Dunder methods in OOP.
Yeah.
And then you realize how everything that happens in Python is somehow linked one layer underneath the surface with these Dunder methods. So I think there's a lot of these, the thread that links lots of things together. Often beginners know how to use a for loop, they know how to use a while loop, they know how to define a function. But once they see them all fit in nicely together, you have this, ah, now I get it. And I think there were a lot of those moments, as in like, I've learned this stuff before, but now I get it because I can see it, how it links with other things. I can see it working in projects. And I know quite a few students enjoyed, we've mentioned those, the project at the end, the final 2-week project.
Yeah.
And I think it was, for many of them, it was a learning process to see how to build a project, not just the Python you need for it, but how do you build it step by step? And you start with a bit, and then you sort of keep adding bits to it and refactoring from time to time and checking that everything works, and then adding a bit more. And then, oh yeah, writing some documentation. Let's not forget about that. So it's seeing this whole process. And I think that was another part of the course that many students thought, yeah, had never realized how much thinking goes into creating a project.
Before actually writing the code.
Exactly.
I have a really good conversation about spec-driven development with Mark Brooker, and we went pretty deep into this idea of like, okay, there's so much of this planning and so forth beforehand. And their system breaks it into like 3 separate documents. Okay, we have like requirements, and then we have like, this is the actual tasks that we're going to do, and then, you know, stuff like that, kind of going through it. And all that planning is kind of critical before you start, you know, writing code. I mean, you can start writing it, and then it's just often you'll just end up in a very different area of of where you wanted to go.
Absolutely. One of my favorite quotes, which I use a lot, so all my students will know this quote, is first solve the problem, then write the code. And I think this is so true. It's whether it's a small problem that requires, you know, a 20-line program or a much larger project, it's what problem am I trying to solve? Can I solve it as a human being, first of all, you know, before we bring coding in? Do I know how all the pieces fit together? And then let's bring the sort of the programming layer in. So I think many students found that process interesting, and it was new for many of them.
So one of the things that you have as an additional set of materials is all of this resources that RealPython has, and you do this sort of aggregation and pre-planning for them, having all of those things ready to go. How did that work out in the beginner course? Was that useful again for you comparatively to the intermediate course?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way the course works is that I've curated content for every day of the course from our real Python material. Sometimes it's written content, sometimes it's video courses. And that was the core content, if you like, every day. That's what they need to do for sort of 60 to 90 minutes. But then there are the live sessions. We had three sessions a week. And that's where we can go a bit deeper. In fact, often I tell them, look, as you're going through the resources, write your questions down because you will have questions, and then bring them to the live sessions. In fact, two of the three live sessions in a week were Q&As.
Yeah.
So mostly it was Q&As because it's about, if you're learning, you're going to have questions. Whom should you ask? Well, bring them to the Q&A, ask the questions, and we'll have discussions through those. So I think it works nicely. And it also means that it's a multimodality type of course. You have some reading to do. You're watching some video courses. You have some live sessions with other people, other human beings, and the real instructor. And then there's a forum. So you're not always learning in one format. You're learning in many different formats. So
yeah.
It keeps the cognitive load down. It sort of makes it more interesting. And I think it works nicely to have these multimodalities all fitting into an 8-week course.
One of the interesting things about learning in this age of the internet and all of these tools is learning how to use something like a forum. I feel like there is a lot of people that don't know like etiquette or how to write a question or how to approach certain things. Is that something that you had to address, or did most people kind of slot right into it as far as like getting comfortable with using the forums?
No, that's very true. I think, especially in the beginning, I do have to encourage them a lot about just post on the forum. It's just us.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the famous, you know, no question is a silly question. You know, you only have silly answers, and that's on me then to give you non-silly answers. And I think you find some participants who are more comfortable with forums. Now, either it's because of someone's personality or because they're used to being on forums. So you can see that some are more active. Some are sort of sitting in the back. So
yeah.
You can see that they're there. Sort of sometimes you get a thumbs up, but perhaps participate less. And I think that's fine. You know, we're all different. We all have different personalities. So some might want to ask lots of questions and post lots of comments on the forum.
Yeah.
Others might want to be more spectators, and that's fine. I do think it's a great resource because effectively the forum was the way of gluing everything together. You had the content you do every day, the live sessions, but the forum is there 24/7, as it were. You can always go and ask a question. I do tell them I do sleep from time to time, so I can't answer it straight away, but
what?
More or less. yeah, it does happen. But broadly speaking, the question will be there. And then, you know, and if I'm not there, other students can sometimes come and start.
Sure.
Answering the question, right, or start a conversation. And then I, as an instructor, will go in and carry on. So, yeah, different people, it's fair to say, different people use the forum in different ways and at different levels. But it's still a resource there for everyone. The conversation is there for everyone to benefit from.
Yeah, that's great. I want to wrap up with talking about heading in here into 2026. Instances of both. You're going to be doing an intermediate course and a beginner's course. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and where people can learn a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, we've run the intermediate course several times this year. This was the first time we're running the beginner's course. But we're now going to sort of get into a rolling program of running them pretty much continuously. So in February, we have a new Python for Beginners course and a new intermediate deep dive course. So they'll be running at the same time. So whatever level anyone is at, and if they're interested in some of these courses, then we'll be running them. And the idea is to be running these courses continuously, sort of with a few weeks break in between. So they'll be running several times throughout the year.
Yeah. And if people want to learn more, it's at realpython.com/live. Yeah, realpython.com/live.
That's one,
slash live.
.com, yeah. Don't forget the .com.
Yeah, awesome.
I'm sure all your audience know how to get to realpython.com.
Yeah, yeah. And they know that I have show notes that have all these links. So I'll include some more of the details. And I did have a conversation in the spring with people from the intermediate course. If you want to learn a little bit more about that or hear some of their experiences, you can. Otherwise, we'll be staying on topic here and talking to a couple people from this beginner's class. Thanks so much for coming on the show again, Stephen.
Pleasure as always. Thank you, Chris.
It's time to shine a spotlight on another RealPython resource. And well, this is the one that we've been talking about throughout this episode. It's the live course, Python for Beginners, Code with Confidence. Are you ready to learn the fundamentals of Python step by step in a friendly, interactive cohort? Build confidence writing code and understand the why behind Python's core concepts. Practice Python fundamentals and core programming concepts. Build working programs from scratch and cap it all off with a final guided project that will reinforce the key skills you've learned along the way. And you'll also receive a certificate of completion as recognition for your progress and newfound Python proficiency. Again, to learn more, you can go to realpython.com/live, or as always, you can learn more by looking at the show notes. All right, this is going to be a fun one. I have a couple of people that are joining me from our Python for Beginners cohort live course that just happened. And first, I'd like you to meet Andrew. Andrew, where are you from?
Well, I'm living originally from Jamaica, but I live in Plymouth, down in southwest England.
And Lewis, where are you joining us from?
I'm originally from West Africa, Ghana, but currently in the United States here, just in Nevada.
Awesome. Well, I have a whole bunch of questions for you. We did another episode in the spring of, I guess it'll be last year by the time this comes out, that was about our intermediate cohort course. And I always think it's interesting to learn what the experience is for people learning Python. And in their case, a lot of them had been experiencing Python and doing some stuff with it already. And they wanted to really sort of solidify what they were doing and so forth. And so I thought it might be even more fun to kind of talk to some people who are, you know, beginners at Python and want to learn a little bit more and get a grounded foundation. I guess the first question I have for you, and maybe I'll start with Lewis on this one, were you learning programming before the course? And if so, what were kind of the techniques you were using to learn programming?
So programming, yeah, if you ask me that question in a different way, it would be kind of like, okay, if I have to go back in time and for my undergrad study a particular course, I think it would be computer science. So for programming,
okay,
I was basically applying programming to solve problems that I encounter in my field of specialty, that's in water resources and hydrology. So I was more at the end of applying Python to kind of solve those problems. And how can you really solve those problems or use a tool if you've not covered the basics, right? I ended at a point where I became a self-learner, right? How to apply this knowledge in solving the problems that I encounter. And although I did solve most of those problems, I felt like I was missing the fundamentals, the basics, because it was much more of learning how to do what I need to do rather than moving straight forward of just applying the tool of Python.
Sure. Okay. So you felt like having a bit more structure might help continue your learning and give it a little bit more of a solid foundation?
Yes. Yes. Because my field of specialty is basically, I mean, it involves heavy use of Python. And
okay,
it's how can you perform well? How can you be a best or a high top performer at your job if you really don't know how to use your tool really well, right?
Yeah.
So,
okay. So you were actually using Python on the job, and are you working with like specific libraries? Are you, I guess maybe explain how Python integrates into that, because I can think of like 12 different ways you could do it. Like I can think of like a data science-y kind of stuff. And then I can also think of like stuff that I used to do, like creating reports and so forth. But if you're willing to reveal some of that.
Yeah, I use Python as a tool in heavy data science, also in hydrological modeling. That's preparing data insight into my model, running the model also in a Python interface. And after running the model, collecting the output and also crunching the numbers, that's with the data analysis.
Yeah.
Which comes with the computing of model parameters, plotting of graphs. So heavy use of the NumPy, the Pandas, incorporating the various data structures found in Python, the list, the dictionary, the sets, and other data structures that we have. And interestingly, functions really came neat whilst I was trying to use Python. So that's how I've been applying Python in my field.
Awesome. Andrew, I guess kind of the same question. Were you doing programming before, and what were the techniques you were using to learn programming generally before the course?
Yeah. I'm a little bit older than Lewis, basically. So when I graduated, when I graduated back in the 80s, I mean, I learned Fortran at university.
Sure.
With the old dot matrix printers. People don't understand that the screen these days is unbelievable.
Yes.
And, you know, it would take a long time. You'd type something in, the prompt would either come back instantly or 3 hours later, you know, error. So painful.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, this isn't for me. I became, well, actually, an actuarial training was my first job, but I became an accountant. I worked at JP Morgan in the financial world. And there, you know, PCs were just really coming on board. You know, I got into a little bit with Excel 4, and then it became VBA, changed everything. And
yes.
I played around with SQL, where databases were there, you know, just writing select statements, really. But the problem with SQL, of course, is that you can drop a table. So you don't get access to the main database. Nobody will give you that. So you have to get a table written for you and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then recently, I mean, I was never going to study like C++ or anything new, but I got into the Python because just, you know, because it's open source, easily done. And although I always sort of said, you know, I'm not a programmer, I'm not a developer, in IT projects that I've been involved with as a business analyst and project manager, there's just no resources. And IT are stretched, that no one can help you.
Sure.
But the users are always my biggest thing. Even when I'm told by my manager, I'm not paying you to solve their problems, I'm paying you to deliver this project. A lot of the time, to understand the domain, you have to work with them. And when I see people typing numbers into a spreadsheet, it's like, why are you doing that? So if you can get a file that will upload that for them, that's 1 hour's work they can do in seconds.
Right.
So, but nobody would program that. I would have to do that. So I'd find a way to do that in my own time to do that. So I always sort of said, well, I could take someone else's VBA program or Python program, you know, net, tweak it to make it work.
Okay.
And I always managed, like Lewis was saying, I always managed to make that work in my business environment. But at the same time, having tried to learn Python through many different courses and tutorials, again, I found I was learning pieces, but it wasn't being stitched together. And faced with a blank IDE screen, I just wouldn't be able to do anything.
Yeah.
Or a blank REPL. It's just like, where do I even start? So I think, so trying to the courses like that gave me bits and pieces, but I knew, no, I need the structure. I need from ground up the way to tackle this thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Your experience sounds a lot like a lot of office workers. My wife is one of those.
Yeah.
And I call her an Excel queen because she does everything inside of it. And she's very, very, very adept to a certain point, but she always kind of turns to me and says, well, could we do this? Could we do this? And because she's like yourself, a creative individual who has a passion to like, can't we be more efficient? She constantly gets asked those types of questions, like, you know, from her manager, well, couldn't you do this? And like the bank she works for has an entire IT department. But at the same time, it's like getting something through that chain and process of getting something created for you to use is always kind of difficult. So I can see that kind of wanting to solve your own problems.
Virtually possible. And I like to think of myself as a problem solver, and you just cut through the nonsense and just like, well, I don't care of the politics of the situation to my contractor, but how can I deliver something for you? And that always pays dividends in the end when projects get very broad, you know, towards the end of go live or UAT testing. But if I've delivered things for people without with no thought of getting payback, I always get paid back because they have the time for me, and my area always gets done, basically.
Oh, that's
and
good.
Project managers are kind of like, how did you do that? So, well, I could tell you, but yeah. So, but it's also the problem-solving side of things, and I think that's where Python side of it comes into it. And because my next would be machine learning and big data, which is big in banks, well,
yeah,
Python's the go-to thing for that. So that's kind of leading into that.
Yeah, it's awesome. So it sounds like you guys both have a background in programming general, and we're looking for this sort of foundational stuff to build on top of it. You are like many people that I interview that come to Python from like this desire and need to take data and things that they're doing and make themselves more efficient. And it's funny because it is a fairly approachable language that you can kind of work your way through it. But I agree with you. The idea of like starting with a blank screen is something different than maybe modifying things. Is Lewis, were you taking other people's work in some cases and modifying it to work for your particular purposes?
Yeah, that was also a couple of scenarios, because what I see with Python whilst you're applying it is, if you've really not covered the basis, every problem that you encounter whilst you're problem solving, it's going to force you to go back to learn the basis. So most of the time, that's what we call, I think that's called refactoring, right? Well, I mean, whilst you pick a certain code and then you try to edit it to work for your task. Yeah, I was also doing that. One issue that keeps popping or coming back is that even before you can, edit that code, I edit that code to suit what I want to do.
Yeah.
You still have to read the code, and reading is not complete without understanding the code.
Sure.
So let me say, you might get stuck at a point where it's like a while loop without a break, because it will always force you to go back to learn the basics if you've not really covered like the fundamentals. So
yeah,
there are a couple of courses, they were just piecewise, but what Real Python really has is, they brought in that structure, and that's what I was really glad that, I really took this course. And one thing to note is, you can never be a good programmer if you don't practice.
Yes.
So that's one key I really took out of this course. So I'm really getting into a point where every day, like Andrew said, right, I want to start do something from a blank page.
Sure.
Right? That forces me to go back, to try to pick, to try to apply the skills and then the knowledge that I pick from this class covering the fundamentals of Python. Other than that, I'm just going to be stuck in that loop of trying to edit a code, I encounter a problem, I need to go back and learn the base. It's going to be like, it's going to be like a cycle. So
endless loop.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, one of the things that you kind of are touching on here that Stephen modified about the course is to make it be, okay, we are going to apply this like every week. Was that useful to you?
Yeah, that was useful. And part of it was how those things manifest in the tasks or the assignments that he gave.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you can actually see the usefulness of a tool if you don't apply it. So the problems or the assignment that he gave really came in handy, because it forces you to find a use for the knowledge you've acquired.
Right.
And knowledge is not useful when we don't see the practical aspect or the application aspect of it. It just exists. But when we start applying it, then it gave me the aha moment. Oh, okay, this is how useful a list is. Okay, a dictionary might be better doing this task.
Okay.
You know, so that was really nice as part of the course.
What was your experience with that, Andrew?
Yeah, exactly. I think pretty much that idea that I think Stephen, found that sweet spot with the 8 weeks side of it, 6 weeks kind of getting the fundamentals down and 2 weeks big project. But for me, my aha moments, as Lewis sort of pointed out there, were kind of profound in the sense that he said, right, before you even touch coding, whether it's Python or anything else, stand back, days before computing, what's the problem you're trying to solve?
Yes.
Work out what steps you're going to use to do that. Forget about the coding side. I was like, yeah, of course, we do that all the time. But for some reason, when you put the coding hat on, I'm in a different mode. It's like, no, don't worry about that. You're going to get stuck. And then the second thing is that because in the past, I've just mainly taken other people's programs and tweaked it.
Yeah.
you see the finished product, don't you? So you assume, wrongly, oh, they start at the top and work to the bottom. I could never do that. Yeah, but as he pointed out, nobody does that. That's not how it works, especially if code gets refactored based changes throughout the time. At what point are you looking at?
Right.
So then it's like, so it's wood and the trees. The trees are the specific things of for loops, while loops, etc., that you have to know. And I think, you know, you have to have a certain amount of knowledge. But the bigger picture of the wood is, what problem are you trying to solve? How does then that fit in? And then the glue really is the kind of the practice, the earth, if you like, or the glue that holds everything together. Mm. And that's going to be the biggest piece. Well, only practice will get you that, and talking with other people and seeing things and thinking about it yourself. So the actual practicality of doing it and the process, that's more the process.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, from doing many projects that way, just focus your idea on one very small thing, admittedly, but to try to understand that concept. And for me, that was just, it was brilliant that way, basically. Just, you know, you could build on something, and that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, it's a huge topic to try to do. So how on earth are you going to ever get that completely right? You're not. But I think you've made a real good stab at that. And I'm very happy with the course, because it's given me that confidence, if you like, to actually go, okay, there is a blank screen, but what is the problem? What, how am I going to solve that? Try this, try that, which later on might change. But that's okay. I've got the community I can rely on, or I can look back on it, and I can understand how that works, and I can see that process getting to that end result, and you get an end result at the end of it.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Simon Willison, who's somebody who's been programming for a very long time. He worked on initial versions of Django and so forth, and he's out here messing around with AI, but he's definitely one of those people that creates code all the time and is trying to solve his own problems, and then he just stores it away. He's got like this massive GitHub repository of all these little problems that he's solved.
Right.
And there are things that he can then pull and pick and choose in the sort of modularity of programming generally, which is kind of what, again, you're seeing, like this idea of like, oh, well, these pieces can be used all over the place and be rebrought in. And so it's always kind of fun to have that moment.
Where have I seen that before? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my father always used to say, he was a lawyer, I mean, a diplomat and lots of other things, but as a lawyer, he always said to me, the thing is, Andrew, is that you can't possibly know everything. And he had an amazing memory. But and he was at Princeton and Oxford. But what he said to me is, you can't know everything, but the most important thing is you've got to know where to go and get it, that information, or who to go and talk to. Mm. And that's a skill you need to develop. And no one can tell you how to do that. I have my way, and you'll find your own way. But don't think that you've just got to know it all. It's, where do you get it? Either you've done something, like you're saying, that repository, or a friend of yours, or community, or whatever it is. Don't be afraid to do that. So I think that's what he gave me, that will to explore. Never, don't feel stupid about asking questions. I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
I think I'm at the University of Life. You know, when people sort of say, what subjects do you study? Is that, what do you mean at university? That was a long time ago. But, you know, I'm interested in lots of things. Life is interesting. And people are interesting. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell by the books behind you. Were there things that were challenging about the language itself, about Python, that were sort of sticking points? And if so, how did you get past them? Or what were areas that you were like, oh, this was confusing to me, and maybe you were able to get through them with the basics course?
Yeah, thinking through that question, what came to my mind is, you know, as a beginner, here you are. You are being introduced to various aspects of Python with regards to the fundamentals, the data structures, how to store data, how to repeat a process. And it comes with a bit of an excitement, right? It's like a kid in a candy store. And you have so many options. And one challenge was how to use the right tool for the task or assignment.
Yeah.
Right? That really makes solving an assignment or working on a mini project really efficient. So if it's, let's say, maybe storing a data, for example, would a list be better? Will a dictionary be better? Which data structure or which aspect is the best fit for me to make my mini project or to make my problem solving efficient? So, and I mean, I'm not going to have a straightforward answer unless I practice and with time get to know that, oh, okay, this is much more efficient. I have various versions of, how to solve the problem, various solutions, but this solution is going to be more efficient, right? So, and like I said, it is only practice that is going to get me to a point where I'm going to be kind of like writing codes which are, I will say, Pythonic, right?
Sure.
If, let's say, they give us a task to solve, Andrew's version is going to be different. Mine is also going to be different. And they are all going to end up being a solution. They are going to solve the challenge. But one might be more efficient than the other. And that's what constant practicing, that's what covering the basis, that's what, you know, coding every day going to elevate me to a point where I'm efficient, but not just solving problems, but I'm efficient. Yeah.
I want to build on that a little bit because efficiency can be thought of in multiple ways. And one of the ways that I think is focused on to a detriment with programming is how fast my code ran.
Yes.
Versus like how fast I was able to build a solution and how fast I was able to wrap my head around it and get something done. And it makes sense to me and I can reuse this. And I, as an efficient person, am able to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And which is kind of both of those things in a way. Does that build on top of what you're saying? Like that the efficiency is like, this makes sense to my mental model and this works from the way that I program.
Yeah, I think you pretty much touched on it. Like as beginners, we are much more into, okay, is my code going to run faster?
Right.
And along the line, what I also think of is my code cleaner? Is it clean? If, let's say, Andrew or another person picks up my code, is there going to be readability?
Right.
Right? Will Andrew be able to easily read my code? Right. So that's one layer that I want to also add on top of the efficiency. Cleaner code, easy readability, and easy usability.
Yeah. Yeah. Efficiency can involve the ease of use too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Andrew, like you have a mixed background in programming. You were, you know, back in the day in Fortran and things like that, like I did myself back in the day. Were there things you found challenging inside of learning Python?
I think the idea, people talk about object-oriented programming and, you know, difficulty in Python, can do both. It is a simple concept to hear, but to actually, right. You start thinking about how it actually from inheritance and stuff, like, okay, that's the way that works. I think it was more little things like truthiness and falseness and understanding of, that didn't quite work as I expected.
Right.
Ah, that's because Python under the hood is doing something a little bit different in indexing something, for example. And I mean, okay, there might be subtle things, but a lot of the times I'm happy if the code works, basically, and doesn't throw out error messages, and then I can look at tidying things up.
Yeah.
But it's more, why didn't that work? And I guess it'll be when something does work in production or whatever, if something suddenly breaks that worked yesterday, what happened there? How on earth do you debug that? Somebody gone and done something else, which has touched on code that my code doesn't supposed to look at, but is now affected in some way. And I guess that's where what Lewis is basically saying is that how deep readable, how can you quickly get to that, where that problem happened, I think. But for me as a beginner, that's kind of like quite a ways away. It's more, I think by trying the code, it doesn't matter whether you use a list or a dictionary or whatever, just try it. Does it actually work? And then you can build on that. That for me is the important thing in the progress. And I think, as you alluded to Chris, it's more, if I was running a team, how does a team work together?
Yeah.
It's not so much that end result that we got the super fastest code. Yeah, but how did you get there? If there are some members of the team that just have to do it their way, then maybe that's not going to work well in the team because the team needs to go together. So I know from a practical perspective, maybe not where your angle was coming from, but I can see how that was absolutely ideal of, and it works for me personally, because if I can build on something, then I can see it working and I can see how maybe perhaps look at it better in a different light,
yeah.
Shall we say, rather than just have one way, partisan way of doing something, my way or the highway. Well, that's fine all the time. Your way is correct, but what happens when it's not? You know, so
right. I feel that comes up a lot in programming.
Comes a lot in banking, in IT.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it too. Yeah, yeah.
And it's politics more than anything else when you think about it.
Right.
It's like how Agile is disrupting everything. Agile's a brilliant idea. And actually, Waterfall even suggests, the original Waterfall theory is talking about retesting all the time. But that got dropped somewhere along the line. And so you think that, no, you're only testing at the end. And actually, the original, I read a paper, it's just like, no, that was never the original idea. You have to prototype. You have to be testing.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the line, people get their own views. And at the end of the day, I try to cut through all that because it's like, how do I get this thing working for a user or for me?
Yeah.
And then I can talk to other people to go, how can I make this better? Like we talked about before, with big data, It has to be efficient, otherwise it ain't going to run. And I think right. Lewis and I actually attacked the problem in a slightly different way, but what Steve was able to show is that, okay, Andrew's done it this way, say a for loop, that's great. But now we've changed the problem, so the user now inputting. So Lewis's way of using the while loop would work better in that situation. Mm. It's not saying that's always right. And so it's like, okay, and that's really good because it's like, okay, there are different ways of tackling the problem. Which way is the right way? Well, it depends.
Yeah.
What time are you talking about? What problem were you trying to solve? It might be very quick and easy to do it in a long-winded way, shall we say, but it's not going to scale up. So and that's why I think it's going to be an ongoing process. You're never just going to write one code and then that's it.
Yeah.
All things to all people. So I think having that mindset of starting somewhere and then being able to look and go, okay, no, actually, this guy suggested something better. I can use that as opposed to, no, it's got to be my way. You know, and I think I have met lots of people from programming, accounting, and all sorts of things who are just so stuck in their ways, but they don't get the results.
Right.
You know, they don't get the results. And, you know, people behind them are left behind with a problem. So that's what I like to try and take with that. And I love Stephen's approach on that because he's able to contrast different things and you can see that to go, okay, I see the different ways of doing it.
I think you both are good candidates for the way of thinking of just, I am willing to learn now by taking the course generally and saying, hey, I want to have a better foundation and I want to have some new ideas brought into you, which is just really refreshing in general. I want to touch on your waterfall versus agile thing. I kind of went back to school again. This is a while ago, like 15 years ago, and was getting back into programming again. And that was an agile, in my opinion, was like sort of bubbling up across corporate America. Mm. It was funny to study it and see what's, you know, why they feel stuff. And again, big battles inside of organizations over this stuff.
Yeah.
And the LLM thing has happened and vibe coding and all that sort of stuff. And I just did an interview about something called spec-driven development. And somebody wrote an article that literally says, oh, we're going back to waterfall. This idea of like planning everything and having it written as specifications and so forth. But they're wrong in the sense that it's not saying it all has to be done. It means that the plan should be written down, that the tasks should be checked off, that we should, again, like you said, that's not part of it. Waterfall wasn't intended to be an inflexible thing, but it was always, you know, set in concrete and said, well, that was the old way. We got to do this new thing where we're just constantly iterating.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you got to think, got to have flexibility. So I like that idea.
And interesting enough, certainly in the world I live in the IT, you know, implementation, the only time I've seen the agile product work properly in the banking and brokering world. We had a regulatory MiFID thing coming a few years ago, which banks had to implement it. They had no choice. They would lose their license if they didn't implement it. And a lot of questions were unanswered. But I worked with developers. They were JavaScript guys, basically, and really great team. And wow, my gosh, that really worked. The moment you start pulling people in from the line, accountants, traders, etc., where you've got to stand up for a meeting, it doesn't work because they don't have time. You know, I'm doing the year end. Should I not do the year end and speak to the auditors, or should I do your project? Well, you have to do both. So, but in that unique environment, who said we got a lot done and we had to change a few things. I had to change the way I work just to accommodate them, but then they could understand where I was coming from to document things and to do testing. And it made sense. And watching how these guys thought, it was very refreshing because they were all quite open. At one point, the project almost died because the IT department pulled a particular bit of software that they needed to make this thing work.
Okay.
And luckily, there was a guy there who'd worked on some other type of project. And literally, he said, oh, I think I can use that. And 3 days later, he had it working and nearly killed the project. But it was just that flexibility that you talked about that's really key. And that's what I try to bring into play. And I think from the Python side of things, it's such a malleable thing. I think recently, I don't know if you read, but the head of MI6, Intelligence Services, BBC thing, basically said our operatives need to learn not just languages, but Python. Interesting enough. And the journalist, interestingly, said, a 30-year-old programming language. It's like, what's that got to do with anything? What, you'd rather have something that somebody invented yesterday?
It's also the most popular language in the world.
Yeah, really. But obviously it's alluding to machine learning and big data, basically, because you can't do that on an Excel macro. You know, GB macro. So.
Yeah. So I wanted to touch a little bit about the project thing. Your final 2 weeks included working on a longer project, and you had lots of parts to build. You were again, taking some of the stuff from OOP classes, and then you were building a command line interface. What were some of the trickiest aspects of working on a larger project compared to maybe some of the other work you had been doing of like writing scripts and smaller exercises? What was challenging to you about that?
Part of the challenge is piecing all the knowledge or the fundamentals I've acquired together, because this was a huge problem. And part of it was how to store the data, how to reuse the data, how to process the data. And all those parts comes in right where I need to look at how to look at the data structure. Is it going to be a list? Is it going to be a dictionary? How can I process the data? Which function might be best for me to write to process the data? How am I going to store the data, right? In which format is it? So,
yeah.
And also, how do I read in the data? So the challenge was for me piecing together all those knowledge, right, of reading, writing, and then analyzing the user input of the data. So that really brought everything together. So it didn't just come like in a day. It's also more of being willing to fail and getting stuck. And when you are stuck, asking Steve the right questions,
yeah.
Right? Like Andrew said, you have to know if you are looking for something, you have to know where you can find it and who to ask for the direction. So
yeah,
that was the challenge. And even asking the right question, right? Even asking the right question, which version of the function might be better, which data structure might be better for me to store, or
yeah,
that was the challenge.
So Andrew, I wanted to ask you, were there things that were tricky for you as far as putting your knowledge together and applying it? Because you've done several classes before that where you built kind of smaller applications as you went.
Mini projects, yeah.
Yeah. So as the larger project approach, were there tricky aspects of like combining your knowledge together to build this larger app?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing is with the mini projects, they kind of stand alone. So, you know, you're working to a specific object to get to minimal functions or loops or whatever. So it's kind of all understandable, which is the building block, and that's fine. Then you get to the fact that, okay, that's all the teaching over and done. Well, now it's a 2-week project. And it's like, okay. But the thing is, it isn't just one thing. There are multiple things. As Lewis sort of alluded to, you know, maybe a dictionary, there's input and output. And that may have changed as you go along. I think Stephen's also trying to show different ways of doing things. But I think what that also shows, coding is this process is not static, you know, and you have to get into your head that things can change and may change. You don't want them to necessarily when things have worked.
Yeah.
But for me, I think generally sort of went fine, but there were times in which you're thinking, now I'm stuck. How can I move forward here? What do I do?
Okay.
And then actually, perhaps, you say, okay, we didn't actually cover this, but there is this kind of function. Ah, okay, that makes sense.
Nice.
And that's not a criticism of Stephen, because there's an awful lot out there. How on earth do you put this all together? And I think the best way is think about it, really try to do your best on it. And then if you're stuck as well, here are one or two solutions. And so it was kind of a stop-start. It wasn't really one big project, which I can say hand on heart, that, oh, yeah, I did that. It's like, well, it's more a collaborative effort and a learning tool. And I think so they were very different to the build-up projects in that sense. But that also kind of, it does knock your confidence a little bit. You're thinking, what have I really learned here? But you realize, it's an ongoing thing. And that's what Stephen was at pains to point out. This is not something. And he said, basically, you have to keep practicing this now. This doesn't just stop now.
Yeah.
You have to keep going with this. And it depends on where your journey is taking you. So I have a particular journey. You know, I'm not going to be designing websites or that sort of thing, but I'm more interested in machine learning and big data. So there are going to be some libraries that I'm going to be more useful. So it's kind of interesting that kind of, I think that helped me in the way I structured my idea of what that big project was in terms of how to approach things and to not to be phased when things don't quite go right or things do change. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a difficult one because I can't say I was completely comfortable with that, but that's part of it. A bit like in martial arts, if you're comfortable, you're not safe.
Yeah,
you have to be on the edge of, you're not sure if this is going to go completely wrong, because that way, variables on your side, you know, chances. If you think you've locked it all down, like it's shown now in movies or whatever, oh, this is where it's on. Yeah, life isn't like that. Murphy comes along for the ride, and if it can go wrong, it will go wrong.
Yeah.
But the question is, can you do something about it, you know? And I think that was the biggest thing for me with this final sort of project. It was like, wow, that's learned so much in there.
Yeah.
But in a different way perhaps than I might have expected. It didn't quite go like the other projects, and that's because it's far more complex, you know. I mean, that's life. And actually, in terms of complexity, you know, maybe real developers laugh because that's not even complex. You haven't seen anything yet. But I think it gave us an inroad into the mindset, basically, really helpfully.
Yeah, actually, I want to build on that just a little bit. What did you find useful about it being a cohort course? Like, were there aspects about being able to work together, the requirement that, hey, this is 8 weeks, I need to be here, the sort of requirements of that? Did that help you learn through the process? And then other tools that were part of it, like the forum and stuff like that, were you able to use some of that for asking some of your questions, along with when you got stuck asking Steven some questions?
Yeah, what was really helpful was the cohort really brought, I mean, I would say some sort of accountability.
Yes.
Because, yeah. I mean, it's a group, right? Although you've paid for it, you don't want to miss out. you don't want to miss out. And in addition to that, I would also say being able to see the various versions of how people tackle the assignment.
Right.
It's very funny how you can think that, okay, I work on assignments, and you might be like, okay, this is my version. Coincidentally, how you solve the problem was the same as another group member. And you look at another person's solution, it's totally different. And it also ends at the same solution. And that's really interesting to me. It really opened my mind that, okay, Python is just that big tool where it's like a double-edged sword, right? You know, you can cut this way, you can cut the other way. And it also taught me that beyond my way of solving a challenge or an assignment, there are other ways. And it tells me Python has flexibility.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I've not coded in Fortran before, but maybe Andrew can tell a bit about Fortran, maybe how I think he once said that one day it's like a linear program. Everything just, you know, has to follow that chronological. And I mean, Python is just malleable, or it's just flexible,
right,
in terms of using it to solve a challenge.
What was your experience like? Again, I mentioned like the forums and other areas where you could ask questions and potentially see other people's code.
Yeah.
Was that useful to you to have that experience?
It was. I think it's right to look at lots of different things, not just speaking to Stephen when we're throwing 3 times a week. But, you know, forum was always there, and you did very good. I mean, he was always answering back at different time zones as soon as he could. You know, pretty much the next day you'd have replies, so he answered everything. I think what's always hard, and I can't even imagine how the best way would be to get around and doing this, but I'm sure folks at Real Python will, is that I might have submitted code and that helped with the accountability, shall we say. There wasn't any onus that you had to do it. Nobody was checking on you to do that. But if people submitted other code, maybe coming from a different perspective,
yeah,
it's kind of hard to tie that all together. And so you kind of felt it was a bit more, yes, Stephen answered my questions, he'd answer, say, Lewis's questions. But how do you bring that all together, knitting it as okay, for the mini project, let's summarize this. Andrew's had this idea, Lewis has had this idea. And I mean, again, not a criticism of that, because I honestly can't think how best to do that. But I think maybe knitting that together would be better. But it's really hard to actually, because you've just got to go through the line by line and see what's what. So,
yeah,
you know, and I think it's
a form of code review, which is a bit hard to do across a whole group of people,
right.
Potentially.
And in the beginner's course, you've got a whole gamut of experience, right? So some people might be asking a question, which I'm not even going to look at. It's like, well, that's so simple. I already know the answer to that. So that doesn't really help me.
Right.
But I think what I did go through everything, because I said, well, even though I might think it's a bit like your guitar, basically, you might play a simple song. I was reading something the other day.
Right.
Yeah, but musicality is something different. You can take the most basic, simple song, but how you approach it.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wow. You know, I'd never really thought about it that way before.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think even with the coding, so I try to force myself, even though it looks like this is a naive kind of question or something I understand, well, how would I really have done it that way? And, okay, that is something to think about. So,
yeah,
you know, it was all useful, basically, you know, I think.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Do you feel like your understanding of programming generally has changed, you know, now that you've learned some of these fundamentals? You talked both about it, this idea about planning and thinking about programs generally. Did it help sort of expand your way of thinking about that and approaching the blank screen?
Yeah, it was helpful from the point of view that initially when I was coding, I'm much more in a haste of getting to the solution and forgetting about the chronological planning phase, right? So the course really helped me. Steve really encouraged us that before we tackle any challenge, let's say, for example, if you're writing a function, right? What is the function going to take? What is the argument? What is going to be the input?
Sure.
Now, from the input, we now determine how the input is going to interact. And finally, what is going to be the end result of the function? What is going to be the output? That's when the return statement comes in, right? So it gave me this idea that every problem that I need to use Python to address or challenge, I need to have a flow of all the steps of how I'm going to address that. That was really, really helpful. And also, in addition to that, the course, it's improved my confidence. My confidence grew in coding, where to an extent I can start from a blank page of, you know, putting together a simple function or writing a code.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, the most important cue that I also took out of the course is practice makes you perfect. Every knowledge that I've accumulated is going to go away if I don't practice. And the only way I can push my boundary or to even see Python more useful is when I practice it or is when I use it. So I'm putting together or like having this personal challenge where like I want to be writing a simple code every single day to really, you know, to really keep me going so that my knowledge base is either improving or I'm adding in new stuff.
Did the accountability of having the group environment help with you, like having, you know, it set as an 8-week course?
I think it really did because, you know, people coming from different backgrounds, of course. But, you know, you kind of hear how, you know, you've input something and maybe somebody would either correspond back and agree or maybe disagree. Not so much of a disagreement, but a lot of people were just silent.
Sure.
But I think it really helps because you can see a real person at the other end with their challenges, with different backgrounds. But And questions they're coming up with, and you're trying to say, okay, well, what's the actual problem they're trying to solve? What's the question they're trying to ask? And how does that apply to me? It won't apply exactly the same way, but that also helps. Because if it was just one-to-one, in the sense the forum was, you know, I'd ask a question, Steve would reply to it.
Right.
Nobody else kind of wasn't that interaction. But when you have that group, kind of that accountability of turning up. And I mean, because I'm between contracts at the moment, it was kind of easier for me because it's not like I was coming straight from work or even other people were. So in that sense, I had the time.
Not juggling lots and lots of responsibilities.
Yeah, but still I had to manage that because I still had to set aside time to do the coding, to look at that. So for me, it was personally, you know, brilliant from that perspective. But the group side of things does bring an energy that, you know, one-to-one just doesn't, basically. So
yeah,
can't exactly say what that is or exactly how does that help. But, you know, it's like teams, basically, right? Some teams work well together and others just don't. It's not just the sum of the parts. So
yeah. That's true.
And the small group really helped as well. You know, you can't have, I mean, we had 10, 11 people on it.
That was my problem when I went to college, that the lecture hall kind of thing, you just feel like, you know, just
with 100 people in it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the other question I had asked Lewis was about taking these fundamentals and then thinking about how it applies now to planning and thinking about complex problems and tying them together. Did the course help with that, or how did it help with that?
Yeah, I think probably as I alluded to before, from the way I always look at that is the wood and the tree side of things and the details and technical things, which you're always going to be, you know, you see, okay, I've got that, or yeah, okay, I didn't know that. So you're adding to it.
Yeah.
But the wood is kind of, what is the problem you're trying to solve? And for me, probably the biggest thing, of course, is the confidence it's given me to look at this blank screen and go, oh, I know where to start, because what's the problem?
Yeah.
I'm not even going to look at the screen. I'm going to define the problem the best I can, and then I'm going to start putting something down. At that point, actually, maybe a little bit different to how Lewis thinks, and that's fine, but it's more like I don't care about the cleanest and the fastest code right now. I just want something to work, like a prototype. You know, can it actually work? Because the initial thing probably ain't going to look like the final, but I'm not worried about that, overly worried. So, but before, I just didn't have that confidence to do that, you know, and then you reach into all sorts of excuses, and it is an excuse. Oh, I'm not a programmer, so what do you expect? Yeah, well, then you're never going to improve, are you?
Right.
So it's more like, well, if you want to improve, you're going to have to grab the bull by the horns here. What are you going to do? And so to doing that, it was kind of a leap. Of course, it's cheap in that sense. But it really, and I expected quite a lot for me to give me that confidence. And it really did, right from the day of the get-go. And
good.
He was able to cut through the stuff to say, right, these are the things you just need to work on now. You need somebody to tell you that. IDEs, for example, and I've seen on forums and things, everybody's talking about, you know, should you use this one or that. He said, don't worry about that.
Right.
Suggested the two, and then, you know, use PyCharm. Well, that might not be the perfect. He said, but you don't need to worry about that. Just get it to do what you need it to do. Later on in coding, you can choose it. I was like, of course. And that's the part.
Yeah.
So you've got to cut through sort of like sort of what I call smoke and mirrors. And it's really difficult to do. But so I think it did it in that perspective quite well. And I felt I got confidence. I can write. I know at least how to start. I know the rudiments of getting a process together on it.
Yeah.
And then the technical pieces come in, of course. And some will work better than others. And some won't work at all. And then that's part and parcel of practicing and talking to people and, you know, researching and getting on with things. Yeah, so the confidence side of things, just for me, a game changer, really.
Yeah. I feel like some people do get caught up in the equipment. I mean, being a music person, it's a constant thing. That's what people talk about. But all fields are like that. I mean, we talk about woodworking. It's like, actually, you just need a saw.
Yeah.
And then start using it. And then you can actually appreciate why this works better for you and maybe not somebody else or whatever. But yeah, it's so funny.
Exactly. So, and it's just understanding, okay, well, okay, but I'm struggling. Well, why am I struggling? Is it a fundamental principle, really? Or is it just maybe usually my setup isn't quite right? The data isn't the right thing. And then using the error messages and stuff like that to, that's what that's actually telling you, you know?
Yeah, good.
But I mean, I remember from Fortran, one of the things I remember, you had to define the variables.
Yes.
And you couldn't suddenly switch from a floating point to, it's like, no, if you define that, you define it, end up, because it's literally, I mean, it's designed for mainframes, you know, sequential, of course, programming anyway.
Yeah.
But of course, with Python, it's just like, well, it might use more space, and maybe some people complain about that, but these days, computing space is relatively cheap, so that's not the problem. And all of a sudden, it's so much more flexible.
Right.
So there's so many things in which you're like, okay, well, things have changed, and I think, to argue one way or the other is just missing the point completely. It's just, what can you do with it? Do you actually get what you need done, or are you still stuck in no man's land? You know, so that's the acid test. You know? So
yeah, totally. How are the ways that you see yourself using the skills that you've developed here?
I think from a practical point of view, in the consultancy that I've done in the past, where I think that will continue providing semi-automated kind of solutions for the users, et cetera, the throwaway part of the project, and which may actually turn into usefulness in the project itself, but that's not the design of it. And I think Python will enable me to do that, has done, like CSV files and sorting out problems that they didn't have, and they needed to make sure that the file they sent to the regulator was 100% right, and there were some known issues at the time when I joined this particular project. It was messing around with columns.
Okay.
I was like, you can't send the Bank of England, like Fed, data that you then turn around and go, oh, actually, we don't know what's happened, but it's messed up.
Right.
It's like, that is not good. So I used Python and I found some scripts and stuff to make sure that the CSV that we're sending into Excel was the same thing that you thought you were sending.
Yeah.
You know, because it, and I messed around with it to change slight anything, letters, numbers, and it could pinpoint exactly where it went wrong. So we knew 100% we were able to prove to my boss, I said, this is rock solid, you know, documented it. So that's really good. But I think in terms of playing around with practicing, there's a couple of things. Scale modeling, talking before, basically, that I'm getting back into.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to build is a Saturn V rocket that I bought with a little Revell, 4 foot tall. But I've also found from the States, guys bought some card.
Okay.
Colored card that when you put together, your eye is deceived. It looks like all the plumbing and lines, but it's actually a card that put together, you glued together.
Interesting.
And that's the umbilical tower.
Okay.
But I want to put LEDs in there, maybe have some vape and smoke, and I'm going to use Python to actually create coding sequences to light this thing up.
Yeah, yeah.
To go through different things. A little bit of fun, because I'm interested.
So microcontrollers and such?
That kind of thing. So playing around with that. And then the other thing is that the martial arts that I study, my teacher teaches all over the world. It does weekend seminars. So over the course of decades, he's accumulated a lot of... Actually, we're digitizing all VHS tapes and things off the seminars themselves.
Okay.
But in the idea that if he does a future seminar or he wants to sell a video that he's produced, something that will can look through it to go, what is that 6 foot stick? Find me all examples of this thing.
Okay.
You know, which you can do. So I can narrow it down to take a clip from it, not the whole 6 hours, but just a clip.
Sure.
Put together with other things he wants, maybe some narrative and text of things that he's written, and photographs from Japan or whatever, and pull things together. And Python's the only thing I couldn't do that with SQL.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to do it with VBA. But Python, all of a sudden, because we're talking about big data kind of thing.
Yeah, I need something that can be in all these domains.
Yeah, with video, suddenly hits all of that. To go, oh, and there'll be libraries that which I can use. I'm not going to have to design that from scratch. But you'd be like, okay, well, there are certain libraries, you know, LLM for text side of things.
Yeah.
But there's going to be other things, video sequencing things. So, and I can't be an expert complete in all those things. But if I want to pull it together, how do I do that? So but that'd be quite an interesting thing, and to build something for him, for students, that they can see here's their, how long they've been training, what things have done, and everyone can recommend what they should be working on next. And if you have that in some sort of an app almost, he could literally, when he goes and sees them on the weekend or whatever, say, oh, you know, Charlotte, come over here. I believe this. And they'll be like, how the hell do you know all of that, basically? but as a practical tool to be able to deliver something that you couldn't have done before. The data wasn't there.
Yeah.
So pulling the data in, of course, in data science is the biggest thing. It's like cleaning the data is the hardest thing. But actually, even if you've got all that data, how on earth do you get that information that you want out of it? And I see Python as, for me, that would be a real game changer. And what I could use that for is, although I'm not going to make any money out of that, I don't mind if he does, but it will all be practice. It'll all be, okay, well, let me look at that. So if I do come to a client in the future that wants to do, I don't know, use their marketing adverts and this sort of thing, I'll have some clue as to how to deal with video imaging that I might not have done on the accounting side.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all going to be like your friend, I think, was talking beforehand, who may store things on GitHub. It's all just learning. And storing it, and maybe you may never use that again, or maybe you will.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter if you used it at some point or something. And Python, I just see as, you know, just a great tool for just, you know, increasingly used for so many things. That's the game changer for me. And it's not so much it replaces a person, but it will be that coworker, that tool.
Yeah.
And that's what the person in the future is going to be needing. But they also need not just to write their essays for them, because that shows a cognitive decline just sets in immediately. But I think we're the generation, basically, I think that, you know what, I'm not exactly a technophobe. I've been around before PCs, but I've seen them, come through and gone through different hoops. But that makes sense to me in terms of, see, instead of what's the project you're trying to do. Now, what tools do you need to use that?
Yes.
And now I can reach into my Python toolbox and start saying, well, that can solve it in one way. Might not be the best way, however you define that, but so long as it gets the result I want in the time I want,
right.
I don't care. I'm not doing it for any other reason.
It's much faster than doing it manually.
Correct, yeah. Or maybe the only way of doing it, because you wouldn't be able to sort, you know, you're not going to go through 150 videos of 6 hours each.
Right.
You know, and find that, you're just not. So, you know, it's a game changer from that perspective that, you know, can seem as creative, just wildly exciting.
Great. Andrew, Lewis, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been fantastic to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Stephen Gruppetta and Andrew and Lewis for coming on the show this week. And I want to thank you for listening. If you like the episode, a great way to help us grow our audience is to share it with other Python users who you think might enjoy it. You can also leave a rating or a review on your podcast platform of choice. If you or your company are interested in sponsoring the podcast, you can find all the information at realpython.com/advertise. You can find show notes with links to the topics we spoke about inside your podcast player or at realpython.com/podcast. And while you're there, you can leave us a question or a topic idea. I've been your host, Christopher Bailey, and I look forward to talking to you soon.